you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir, you.
Plastics.
I'm going to get your money for you. But if you don't get the President of the United States on that phone, you know what's going to happen to you?
What?
You're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's my pleasure to have Dr. Eric Carlstrom back on the show. He returns to discuss his research regarding gang stalking, electronic harassment, surveillance, mind control. I guess we could kind of put this all under the broad category of mind control. Cybernetics is another term I hear often used, which I think is appropriate here. The exploitation of technology to control society. This is the whole purpose of trying occulted societies and occulted science, and at least that, for my estimations. But Dr. Carlstrom, your website. How are you doing?
Very good, Tim, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you
for letting me on there. Yeah, well,
you're certainly welcome, and thank you for coming back on. And your website, gangstalking, mind control, cults.com. This website kind of provides, it's sort of educational research for individuals and interested in learning about organized gang stalking, electronic torture, mind control behavior, manipulation, cloning, and cults. Let's get into this. What's a good way to introduce people into this area and give them a broad understanding of what's going on?
Yeah, well, exactly. This is a huge subject, and I think it has the potential for genociding a very large portion of the human race. And so the quicker that we can help people understand what's going on, I think the better, because then we have a chance of turning this thing around, exposing it, and hopefully defeating it in its tracks. It is an enormous subject, and my gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com website, I just put that up, I think, about a little less than a year and a half ago, and I've been posting on it like crazy. That website came out of my 911nwo.com website. I also have another website, naturalclimatechange.org, and another one, San Luis Valley Waterwatch, .com. And then my musical site is ericcarlstrom.com. I retired from a 30-year teaching profession with California State University, teaching geography in 2011, and I've been really applying my research skills or habit, whatever you want to call it, to subjects that I think are most important. So I've kind of moved from an earth science orientation to more political, and so this is why we find ourselves having this discussion. Along the way, in 2013, I began to notice that I was targeted by this program. So I have the benefit still of sound mind and body, more or less. to be able to study this stuff as well as observe how it is being played out on me. And so let's just begin this way, Tim, if you don't mind. And again, I take a historical approach typically because it does help provide the context. So let me just ask you a kind of a general question. I probably get an ace on this test here. What do President John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, 28 Black Panthers, actress Jean Seberg, writer Ernest Hemingway, a musician activist Judy Berry, four dead students at Kent State Massacre, Senator Paul Wellstone, David Koresh, General Patton, Admiral Borda, Dr. David Kelly, CIA Director William Colby, U.S. Secretary of Commerce Ron Brown, First Secretary of Defense James Forrestal, Deputy White House Counsel under President Bill Clinton Vince Foster, CIA toxic weapons chemist Dr. Frank Olson. What do these people all have in common?
Well, they're all dead now.
Well, yeah, they're all dead.
And they were all assassinated. Yeah.
They're all assassinated. Yeah. The more or less political assassinations because these individuals became troublesome to the power structure. So, indeed, the power structure has for a long time had a means of disposing of troublesome individuals in order to do what they call perception management. In other words, manage the direction, social engineering, manage the thrust, the direction of the culture. John F. Kennedy Jr., same thing, you know. Also, plane crashes are very popular with this crowd. So, you know, that explains Ron Brown and John F. Kennedy Jr. and many others. So easy to do and to deny. Now, if you go onto my website, I've notated several interviews that ex-military wife Kay Griggs did back in 1998 and then also one in 2005, in which she basically spills the beans and tells you how the structure works that does this. These professional assassins are often mind controlled. In fact, her conclusion is that the U.S. military is a mind control, gang stalking cult operation run by sexual deviants who are mostly homosexually recruited at a fairly young age. They take very capable young men and then they homosexually recruit them, give them scholarships to the top universities like Princeton, etc., and then control them for the rest of their lives so that they will take these various functions. And she names names. I've written them down. They're all on that post on my website. you know, we're starting to get some breakthroughs in terms of understanding. I feel like we're starting to get some understandings of how this very complex program works. I began that way because, you know, I wanted to give the kind of the broader historical context. And if we look deeper into similar programs in other countries, we can look at the East German Stasi police in which one out of six civilians was recruited with the top secret military police to spy on their fellows. COINTELPRO of the FBI in the 50s, 60s, and 70s certainly was responsible for some of the murders that I just mentioned. We can also look at other programs like the CIA's MH Chaos or the CIA's Operation Phoenix to see that there are ways to dispose of individuals within a society who are, quote unquote, not ideologically assimilated. Mm-hmm. But this program goes deeper than that, you know, and of course we sometimes call it gang stalking. This is a very, very inadequate term. We call them targeted individuals, which of course is a military term. A target is an enemy or an adversary, somebody that they're going to kill, or disable or disrupt or whatever. I've actually boiled it down, and you hit these points too in your introduction, Tim. It's not only gang stalking, and we do have now in Dr. Ronnie Kilda's book, Bright Light on Black Shadows, and I've transcribed it on my website. We do have a gang stalking manual that was used in Operation Gladio in Western Europe, in specifically Italy. And, you know, we could add Prime Minister Aldo Moro to that list, you know, of people who were unacceptably left-wing oriented and therefore had to be disposed of, along with hundreds of others in Western Europe by the stay behind armies and Operation Gladio, which were organized, controlled, and funded by MI6, CIA, and NATO, by the way, mm-hmm. with local affiliates. So, again, we look and we see that this program has real legs. It has, you know, historical precedent. And I've got that information on my website. But it's not just gang stalking, which is a, you know, kind of a civil military operation. It's also mind control is being used. Also, electronic warfare is being used and cybernetics, you know, computer control, as well as perhaps brain mapping, brain cloning. All of these things are conjoined in this diabolically evil program, because it, the people that are, say, put on these terrorism watch lists, you know, there's at least 2 million in America, are never informed of that, and they're not allowed to find out if they are, because this is classified information. But then they become subject to these tests, you know, to these weapons testing systems, to the mind mapping, to the gang stalking, etc. So, you know, wow, this is we got a tiger by the tail here. This is extremely evil. It is extremely widespread, and a lot of people are being killed as we speak, being tortured with these programs. I'll stop for a second and let you have a word here, Tim, if you'd like to add something.
Well, you should have alluded to the historical precedent here, and someone first hearing this is going to say, what is this guy talking about? This is crazy. Nothing like this can exist. It'd be exposed. People would talk and something this extensive. Yet we do have examples that are well documented, admitted now in history of other governments and also the U.S. government experimenting on people. We have the Tuskegee Project, of course, which is infamous, which is now known. And that was targeting black men, from what I understand, with syphilis. We've had, and this reveals the malevolence of those people, the disregard they have for human life and individual rights and the Bill of Rights and the values that we supposedly hold dear in this country. And it also exposes just how, renegade or how uncontrolled these agencies are, because they've been allowed to grow under cover. This is the problem of having a cryptocracy, a secret government, because there's no oversight. Now, this, you know, the Senate Armed Services Committee, the Intelligence Committee, cannot practice reasonable oversight over these things, not only because, well, the infrastructure that you cite would enable them to sort of blunt or limit any meaningful oversight, whether it's blackmail or mind control or assassinations by troublesome people, as you mentioned. So the political process, the Congress, these things, the courts are completely unable to control these things through normal channels because it is secret. I think you mentioned reading the article. There's some 6,000 contractors that are now involved in this, in sort of security operations or intelligence operations, operating under covert budgets. And then, of course, we have the issue of the black budget. I think on September 10th, 2001, Donald Rumsfeld spoke of $2.3 trillion gone missing from the Pentagon budget. I think that tab's run up to close to $9 trillion since then. There's also what's occurred at Housing and Urban Development and other government agencies where money is just being, well, it's being embezzled, and there's no accounting for these trillions of dollars that have gone missing. And a lot of it's probably just gone to line the pockets of greedy insiders. But there's also suggests that through all that money, the trillions of dollars, they can do a lot with unlimited money, unlimited time, unlimited manpower, correct?
Absolutely. And I think there's a very strong possibility that some of these trillions have gone into this program, which mm-hmm. I believe is very expensive. I think that they, you know, like a targeted individual like myself would cost many millions of dollars to do. It's not a simple process at all. They might recover some of that, you know, by asset stripping the targets, which is one thing that the syndicate does. The syndicate is, the controlling arm of both the corporates and the military aspects of this thing. Kay Griggs attributes, you know, the military says they're just totally in bed with the New Jersey Brooklyn mob, the high levels of the Marine Corps. And her husband was Marine Corps.
Oh, yeah. And she said, yeah, I mean, that goes back to the Operation Underworld during World War II.
Right. That's acknowledged. And then she says Israel is in on every single operation that they do. So all those names, most of those names that I rattled off, you know, figure that Israel was involved as a direct partner with the U.S., shall we call them, assassination teams and operations, including Oklahoma City and, you know, the David Koresh, the Waco thing. I mean, these things are operations. Now, just a little more background here, Tim. You know, I read Colonel Fletcher Prouty's book, The Secret Team, the CIA and its allies in control of the United States and the world, which came out in 1973. And he says, okay, the end of World War II, we dropped the atom bomb, you know, on Japan. And military leaders and political leaders understood at that point that this was not a viable option for war in the future. So they're going to have to figure out a whole different way to do war. And this is, in fact, what they did. They,
I like that. Never do they stop to think maybe we should stop waging war.
Right, exactly. It's much more profitable. Just like Eisenhower said in his farewell address, yeah. Watch out, the military-industrial complex. It's going to pursue its own interests, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, so they changed the name of the, you know, Department of War to the Department of Defense. And then according to Prouty, you know, they would find other countries which they wanted to, you know, colonize in a neo-colonial situation. You know, all the time saying, you know, we're freeing them and, you know, we're winning their hearts and minds. What they're doing, of course, is torture and murder and rape. I mean, Vietnam is a good example of that with Operation Phoenix. But what they do is they identify individuals in those countries that, you know, are you know, kind of leaders, you know, one way or another. And then they identify them. CIA puts them on an enemies list, calls them insurgents. And then the military goes in and kills them. OK, now you've got enemies, right? You've just attacked some people that, you know, and you've invaded their country, as in the case of Vietnam. And you've occupied it, as in the case of all these countries. And so then now what you're doing is counterinsurgency. See, we just play with the words here. Now we call it counterterrorism. But if you look at what Kay Griggs says, and if you look at actually how it has played out, all the terrorism is coming from the dominant powers. It's coming from the United States, Israel, Britain, et cetera. And it's being waged against the civilian population of the world, including Americans like myself. So we've changed the way we've done war. And in fact, then it gets even more changed in the 80s when we have this revolution in military affairs in which they adopted what they call fourth generation warfare techniques, adopting electronic warfare weapons like as in Tesla technology. Now we're talking about silent and invisible uses of the electromagnetic spectrum, which, you know, had been tested through the 40s, 50s, 60s by the CIA and their MKUltra program and others to become quote unquote non-lethal weapons. But of course, that's a euphemism because these things can be tuned up to be lethal and tuned down to be non-lethal. They have many capabilities. And so every aspect of the electromagnetic spectrum has been weaponized now by the powers that be. And it's not just, of course, the military. This is really well told in a book, Tim, called New World War Revolutionary Methods for Political Control by Mark M. Rich. And he outlines how the system works. Every branch of the military is completely able to carry on these operations. There's many other synonyms now that they use for fourth generation warfare. One of them is information warfare. One of them is unconventional warfare. Another, civil military operations. Another one, military operations other than war. In other words, this is military doctrine. No longer is a country going to go invade another country per se. We have hot war still. But these special operations now are going to be conducted throughout the world. And we know in a newspaper article, I think in 2011, that these special operations were going on in 134 different countries. That's out of 190. So the U.S. then seems to be going for complete global control. The U.S. and the United States and its handlers, I'll say, its controllers, which are, you know, I think this syndicate that Kay Griggs speaks about, has controlled the upper levels of the U.S. military and political establishment, as well as, of course, the media, et cetera. So anyway, we've got this different kind of warfare. And let me give you one example of that. And that's here's how the, of course, right after 9/11, we had the, in 2001, we had the North American Command established, NORTHCOM, for the first time. Now, all of a sudden, North America is considered part of the battle space because, you know, the military has to be able to attack, quote unquote, terrorists within our own space. Well, this then gives them the, you know, the legal right then to conduct these operations against individuals and groups that are not, you know, of the liking of the establishment. And as I mentioned, we now have a terrorism watch list and other watch lists. You know, millions of Americans are on these lists. They can't find out if they are, but they get targeted. And the FBI refers to them now as non-investigative subjects. Non-investigative subjects. Well, which means that, hey, there's no need for a FISA court, you know, permission to go surveil and target these individuals. That means go ahead and conduct war against them. Go ahead and kill them. And this is exactly what's happening. And so we have now changed the laws with the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. I'm sure it'll be reauthorized in 18. Which gives the military these powers then, these emergency war powers, of course, because 9/11 was supposed to be an act of war. Well, it was an act of war. It was an act of, you know, terrorism by, you know, the CIA and the Mossad against America and Americans and the world, as per all these false flag events that we're getting kind of wise to. So yeah, now we've got this. Let's just look at this one piece of equipment called C4ISR. Now what we have is a mobile command war room. C4 stands for Command Control Communications Computers. So anybody, say a lieutenant anywhere, can get on his computer. And then ISR stands for Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance. Okay, now these things are going to be produced and sold by Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin and other contractors, sold to the military. And now, or they can be sold, their own people can use this stuff. It doesn't even have to be the military now. Could be mafia, combination thereof. So this guy's got this computer system. It's connected to the geographic information grid, which is the satellite system of many, many satellites. And then all TIs who are implanted with little chips, or maybe even not, with their own brain fingerprints, which can now be detected by the NSA. And of course, with their mobile phones and whatnot, they're very easy to identify where they are. Maybe their truck has a chip or whatever. So they're able to locate all individuals, pretty much, the targeted individuals and the perps, the nodes on their computer screen who are, you know, in the program, who become the civilian spies, who they can get to, you know, walk in front of the TI or, you know, tailgate them or do something to harass them. And most of these perps, they kind of sign away their souls when they become part of this program, as I understand it. There's a couple perps that have gone public and said, well, this is what it's like in the syndicate. And I've got those articles on my website. And once you're a perp, man, you're dead meat. You are also available for these microwave testing experiments, et cetera. And if you rat on your fellow perps, I mean, they will take you out, you know. So anyway, it's a very, very evil, diabolical system. So now we've kind of divided society into, you know, wolves and sheep. In other words, we're going to have this team that's going to go hunt these sheep. And it's a little like the Hunger Games, you know, or what's the other one? Survivor, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, kill or be killed kind of thing, you know. And if you decide to sell your soul, you know, then you get the perks. You know, you get the money, the retirement, the pretty girls or guys or whatever, and, you know, the new car, the new house. And if you're, of course, on the other side, then you're stripped of these things eventually.
It's interesting how those in charge, the psychological warfare specialists, would know, yeah, they create the weaponry and the infrastructure to wage these things, like the cell towers. You know, this is all done in the guise of communication and convenience, but these things, like you said, can be easily weaponized, and now they have the infrastructure under the guise of telecommunications. But also they go through the effort of manipulating the culture, conditioning the culture, changing the culture to accept this type of satanic view through entertainment, like shows like Survivor.
Good point. Yeah, we're being psychologically conditioned. I think the psychological warfare is across the board. And what's happening to the TIs is just, you know, the very worst of it. But the average American and even citizen in the world is the target of intense brainwashing and propaganda. You know, one of the articles that I have posted by anonymous patriots who writing in State of the Nation say that, you know, the Pentagon has a $4 billion a year budget to propagandize the American public. And of course, they propagandize other countries as well. And the $4 billion can be used, and the term propaganda, the definition of propaganda, can be extended, according to the anonymous patriots, to these false flag events, you know, such as Las Vegas and, you know, what happened in Florida, blah, blah, blah. And that these are involving, you know, crisis actors and blah, blah, blah. And this then is legal. This is legal. So what they've done is they've legalized treason with the National Defense Authorization Act and others. And so the military people are in a terrible bind because, you know, they, on the one hand, they've sworn an oath to protect the Constitution. On the other, they're in a chain of command, and the chain of command says, okay, do this. And, you know, what they're doing is shredding the Constitution. So very, very, very compromised. And then if you look at the higher levels, as Kay Griggs points out, many of these people would have been homosexually recruited under MK Ultra mind control. And, you know, for them, taking out a life is nothing. You know,
well, that's a pattern that you see in the intelligence community. In terms of assassins, mechanics, agents, so they're how do they get them to do these things? Is they all emerge from dysfunctional families, and therefore they can be easily be either they're traumatized and they can easily be manipulated because of that background. Sort of the it's a way, you know, to identify people who are good candidates for this type of program. These are like sociopaths that or people who can. You can turn into sociopaths or psychopaths.
Absolutely. Yeah, and Kay Griggs is brilliant in this. And I just have gone through these interviews again. These are 1998 interviews. And by the way, she was targeted and perhaps still is. But she, like Gloria Naylor, who wrote 1996, and like Dr. Ronnie Kilda, these extraordinarily brave women who wrote, Kilda wrote, she was the chief medical officer for Northern Finland and many degrees in medicine. So medical doctor. And she wrote Bright Light on Black Shadows. These women have, you know, figured out what's going on. And even while they're being tortured under this program and then managed to write about it, Kay Griggs managed in these interviews to basically expose the whole system. She's a Christian and very well connected politically with the state of Virginia. She's a descendant of James Madison. Mm-hmm. She's got a bachelor's in Virginia history, a master's in Scottish history, not a stupid woman. And of course, a total insider politically from the time she was born. And then she married this Marine Corps assassin who she got to realize was a raging alcoholic. And in his raging alcoholic diatribes, his stupor, he spilled a lot of the beans. And so she remembers all this stuff and recorded it and has it in these interviews. And she mentions, you know, these people tend to be, like her husband would say, he's an existentialist. And that means you do whatever's necessary. You know, and it's not murder because, hey, it's not personal. It just need what needs to be done, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but she said this guy was basically a robot, except when he was drinking. And then he would get very animated and tell, you know, all the operations, you know. And of course, he was real big in the Iran-Contra scandal in the 80s. He's a good, you know, colleague of people like George H.W. Bush and Henry Kissinger and Brent Scowcroft. And, you know, go down the list of the names and extremely connected with our top people.
Yeah, but the problem with most, they hear those names, George H.W. Bush, you know, the 41st president of the United States, Henry Kissinger, Brent Scowcroft. These are establishment men, that, you know, and it's hard for them to accept these household names are connected to, you know, to such such behavior. But then again, it goes to the question of identifying the true nature of the system.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, when she was being targeted, and this is a bright woman, and you should listen to these interviews if you have the time. You know, she's in Virginia. She has been flagged, as she used that term, by some of the generals that were her husband's colleagues for being a troublemaker. Okay, so then they want to kill her and take her out, as per, you know, the gang stalking system. And so she's being flagged. And she happens to be at Goodwill, and she finds this, of course, Norfolk, Virginia, she says, has got more concentration of military and intelligence operatives than anywhere else in the world. She's at the Goodwill. She finds this field manual of the U.S. Army called Intelligence and Electronic Warfare Operations, FM 34/1. And she's smart enough to read it. And she says, well, this is what they're doing to me. You know,
was it written by Colonel Aquino?
This would be going back to 1983.
Yeah,
Aquino wrote the Mind War paper back in the 80s. But you know, there's a lot of these people. Certainly, Aquino would be one, and you know, others like Dr. John Alexander, the guru of non-lethal weapons. You know, but yeah, these are operations that have now turned on the American citizenry, who they want to use one way or the other, or want to dispose of one way or another. And it, like you say, it's very difficult for Americans to realize that, hey, our establishment is comprised of many of these individuals. Now, again, Dr. William Colby, ex-CIA director, according to Kay Griggs, was taken out by a Navy SEAL team. And she would say, you know, the Navy SEALs would all be, most of them, homosexually recruited. And they, you know, their graduations exercise to go out and do a cold kill, which is, you know, go kill somebody in a random situation. So, you know, these are assassins. And so they apparently had the orders to kill this guy. They didn't even know it was Colby, you know, but the Colby was out there. He was going to testify at something, you know, and then a week before that, this murder happens. Supposedly he's out fishing at 11 o'clock at night on the lake, and it gets overturned and he drowns. You know, there's always a cover story. And but he
had a reputation of always talking too much.
And but interestingly enough, see, he's one of this group, and a lot of this group went to Princeton, and they were in the cap and gown dining club fraternity, much like the Yale Skull and Bones. And so they would have gone through initiation ceremonies, much like the Skull and Bones people.
And that's where Dulles was from, right? Princeton. He graduated from Princeton.
Yes, and Dulles, in fact, was, you know, he trained a lot of these people, according to Kay Griggs, including her husband. Mm-hmm. So he would be the one who was kind of feeding these boys, young men, into these situations where then they become malleable, controllable assets. And, of course, if they are homosexually willing, they become rising stars, and they go right to the top, you know, because then they can – you know, control them better.
They make better nihilists. Yeah, I mean, if you grow up in a healthy family with mother, father, and you have an example of a healthy sexual relationship and human relations in general, it's very hard to turn you into a stone cold assassin. You know,
exactly. Yeah, so. And she talks about that and how her husband, you know, he didn't see his parents for 8 years. They were, you know, kind of moved out of the picture. He was brought into a really top notch prep school, and then Princeton. And, you know, and during this time, he's hanging out with all this really rich Saudi families, and they didn't go to classes. They were doing their, you know, parties on the beach or whatever, you know. And so, yeah, it's a very sordid situation. But William Colby would have been one of these people. But yet, you know, here's an example of somebody who, you know, she had the highest regard for Colby. And he was going to come to her defense. He said he was over the phone just before he got killed. And then,
oh, that's interesting. Okay, to coincide. Yeah, because it is later. He's killed in the 90s.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Long after his testimony in Capitol Hill in the 70s and these things. But he goes, I mean, you're talking Colby, of course, he was an important figure in the Phoenix program.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, a more evil program is hard to find than the Phoenix program. Yeah, these connections run very, very deep into our establishment, you know. So if you're back in the D.C. area, as I think you are, mm-hmm. you know, you'd be surprised, you know, who's doing what, you know. And, you know, these people might have ostensibly, you know, respectable jobs and nice kids, you know. But when you look at what they've been doing, it's psychopathic to the nth degree, and it murder is what you call it. In fact, she used the term wet ops. Her husband would be doing wet ops. Well, what's a wet op? It's murder. Mm-hmm. So these are strategic murders. But now this program has gone global, and it has gone mainstream in a covert sort of way. And that's why I wanted to bring this connection in with say, Lockheed Martin. Karen Stewart, who is a NSA whistleblower, now target, says that 47 of our 50 states have contracts now with Lockheed Martin. Well, Lockheed Martin split off in 2016. There was a group called Leidos that split off from Lockheed Martin. If you go to the Lockheed Martin's website, as I've got in front of me right now, and look under C4ISR, that's again the computer. A system called Command Control Communications Computer Intelligence Research and Reconnaissance, and look at the products that they have to sell. You know, you will see integrated ISR systems. You know, then of course the military would buy these things. Militaries all over the world, or even states. You will see programs that have electronic warfare capabilities, cyber security capabilities, electronic warfare spectrum dominance, airborne electronic warfare, ground electronic warfare, naval electronic warfare, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so, and then this company Leidos splits off. By the way, there is a website that's just come out called targetedjustice.com. Latest news, 6 February 2018. Based on statements by the FBI, it appears likely that the FBI lists all targeted individuals on the terrorism watch list. The FBI refers to targets, as I said this, to TIs as non-investigative subjects. In other words, just hands off. This term can be used in FOIA requests, though. This is a clue to TIs. The Leidos Corporation in Vienna, Virginia, has a government contract to support these operations, which makes them potentially liable in lawsuits. Okay, source WikiLeaks. 26th of January this year, targeted individual wins a hearing in court. Demurer hearing in court. Jack Christianity has won a courtroom victory in his case against the chief of police in the city of Huntington Beach. The evidence was overwhelmingly in Mr. Christiana's favor. This proves that targeted individuals can win in court. 22 January 2018, targeted individuals worldwide, we need your help. Help us identify whistleblowers, the Air Force personnel or contractors that work at Peterson Air Force Base or Shriver Air Force Base that are able to confirm that the U.S. Air Force is targeting civilians using microwave military weapons. We suspect that enlisted personnel at Shriver Air Force Base are pushing the button, as this is one of the most top secret bases in the world. Be a detective and help us do the research. LinkedIn shows 4,400 people in Colorado Springs with the keyword satellite. So what's going on here, Tim, is there's a connection now, we don't see it, but between satellites and computers and our brains. And Ronnie Kilda talks about this, and the potential is that they can turn us, as they have turned others, into mind-controlled biological robots. In other words, just like the MKUltra original remit in 1953 was, the CIA program, we want to get others to do our bidding, even if it's against their self-interest and even their sense of self-preservation. In other words, a Manchurian candidate, somebody who will do an assassination, somebody who will be a sex slave, somebody who will do this. Okay, that's 1953. Here we are, what, 70 years later, more or less. Oh, my God, look what they've done in the last 70 years. And that's my lifetime, I have to tell you. I mean, you know, my whole life has been this, in the sense that this has been behind the scenes, always. And we go back to the patents. We go back to the policies. This has always been in the background, top secret, top secret. This is the Manhattan Project of the mind. The information's there for those who care to look at it.
Yeah, it's not so much a question of what they're willing to do, or what I'm saying is it's a question of capability. They're not inhibited by morality or by the law or by decency. So it's a question of delving into what's their technological capability, what are their limitations, And if they're able to do it, and they see it's in their interest to do it, they will do it. That's the type of ethics we're dealing with here.
Yeah, absolutely. That was proven, you know, by the original Manhattan Project, mm-hmm. which built the atomic bomb in World War II, and then immediately was dropped on Japan. Hey, let's see what. And then they blew up some atomic bombs in space, you know, in 1958. And then they, you know, started playing with all the testing. And then Edward Teller, you know, the original Dr. Strangelove, you know, with Lawrence Livermore Lab, Dr. Edward Teller says, oh, well, let's make harbors in Alaska, you know, using the H-bomb, which he's largely responsible for. So there's no constraint on using these weapons as soon as they come online. And so figure that these mind control technologies are being used on a tremendous scale worldwide right now. And it's our job then to uncover and expose and legally defeat these operations.
And the mind mapping and this that would be necessary for a program like this, this sort of social control or the ability to map or predict human behavior. I mean, that goes back at least to the Princeton Radio Research Project, or the testing people's reactions to things with the Halloween Eve broadcast or War of the Worlds. It was just a test. But the use of mass communication for the purposes of mass manipulation is the whole reason why mass communication was studied. I'm reminded of Christopher Simpson's book, The Science of Coercion, and how that was pretty much funded during the 40s by the War Department, then after the war by the CIA. That television, mass communication, then eventually even the internet, right, was sort of allowed to develop for the purposes so they could collect the metadata so they could develop these mass mind control programs. I'm thinking the Pentagon has all types of, I guess you could call it gaming programs, or they try to game society. And the way they do that is by sucking in all the data and being able to predict or construct a model for reality. And then they can test certain things. And that's probably one of the reasons why some of these events occur, is testing the public reaction, not just the reaction to the event that people are reacting to because they generally believe the events occurred, but they're also following the reaction in the alt media about those criticizing the events as fake events. You know, so we're all kind of being gamed in this system because we're all being monitored.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you look back again at the 1953 documents that Allen Dulles signed, you know, in April of 1953 to put MK Ultra, and that's MK stands for mind control, into practice with 149 subprojects. I mean, many of these were involving the fields of anthropology, sociology, and psychology, and these social sciences then became weaponized by the CIA grant money, so that the CIA could, you know, like you say, learn ways to game the system. And it has not really been admitted. I was reading an article by an anthropologist saying, hey, we as a profession need to own up to the influence that the CIA had on us back in the day when, you know, they were giving us all this grant money. And all that stuff's still under the table, you know. So you might go to university and study anthropology, and you might go study human ecology. And I taught human ecology for 20 years. And, you know, out of geography department, and you might not know that the Society for Human Ecology was the front name then for a CIA mind control project that was associated with this monster, Dr. Ewan Cameron, who was, by the way, head of the World Psychiatric Association, American Psychiatric Association, Canadian Psychiatric Association, and thought that he was going to go and get a Nobel Prize for his noble work. Also a 33rd degree Mason. Mm-hmm. And what he did is figure out how to erase the mind and reprogramming. That's his whole shtick, you know. And he called it depatterning, and then psychic driving. And all of these things have gotten much more sophisticated now that we have electronic means to do this. You know, what would have had to have been done, you know, through trauma-based physical torture to children back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, now can be done electronically. So they don't have to take these. So in other words, we don't have to now take, these Saudi goat herders and put them in the concentration camps at Abu Ghraib and Gitmo, Guantanamo Bay, we can have an electronic concentration camp tailor-made for, you know, Joe Blow in his home. We can put him in an electronic concentration camp with these frequencies and wavelengths of energy. We can gang-stalk him on the street to knock him back into his home, to, you know, strike fear into his and to psychologically destabilize him. So you're absolutely right. I mean, all of these things fit together in a way that is beyond the imagination of most. So it's our responsibility then to kind of fill in the top secret gaps to the best of our ability. Again, a lot of this stuff is classified, and but a lot of it is declassified. So let me just read you this come chapter 10 from a book called Bad Experiments, Why Gang Stalking Works. And here you'll see the psychological aspect of this and how deliberate it is. Gang stalking and related psychological attacks are designed to surround, isolate, and eventually destroy its victim. The gang stalker's routine may develop slow over a period of months or years. The gang stalker's intent is to completely surround the victim, cut him off from friends, family, and other support systems. Eventually, the victim's 24-hour daily routine is monitored and manipulated by gang stalkers and other covert operatives. The psychological attack eventually overwhelms the emotion of the victim. He becomes mentally unbalanced. His emotional reserves are depleted, and he is isolated from any support systems that can bolster him. He will eventually react to these relentless psychological attacks in a way that results in incarceration, homelessness, suicide, or death. The gang stalking methodology falls under a system of psychological operations being developed and tested on American citizens by covert quasi-law enforcement agencies. Okay, so, you know, there's documentation for this stuff. And by the way, there is another, the C4ISR I mentioned. I was watching a YouTube by an ex-military guy. He said in the field they use the term ISR to stand for isolate and remove the civilian target. So this is what's happening. They're trying to emotionally, psychologically break the target down by isolation. This is really part of the MKUltra Kubark torture. I think that the gang stalking manual comes right out of MKUltra and the Kubark torture interrogation manual. Here's what the CIA Human Resources Exploitation Manual says. The purpose of all coercive techniques is to introduce psychological regression in the subject by bringing a superior outside force to bear on his will to resist. Regression is basically a loss of autonomy, a reversion to an earlier behavioral level. As the subject regresses, his learned personality traits fall away in reverse chronological order. He begins to lose the capacity to carry out the highest creative activities, to deal with complex situations, to cope with stressful interpersonal relationships, or to cope with repeated frustrations. Now you see how diabolical this is. This is coming out of the American taxpayers' money.
Mm-hmm.
We paid for these experiments, and we're paying for these torture programs. You know, I mean, this is the American people have been duped on a scale that is very hard to imagine.
Well, how do you restrict these programs to just the bad guys, if there are bad guys out there, right? That's the problem with these things. Obviously, this can be once this is perfected or to an art form or a science, it can be adapted to any person deemed dissident or problematical to the system, right? I mean, and that could be a critic, a legitimate critic that we're supposed to tolerate in a free society, because that's how you keep the system honest and functional, is open it to criticism, right?
Exactly. And that is exactly what has happened. In other words, these elements of torture and spycraft, which were, you know, maybe at first applied in other countries against the quote-unquote communists, are now widely being applied to anybody that gets on these target watch lists, these terrorist watch lists.
Well, this is why you need the continual war system, whether it's the First World War, the Second World War, the Cold War, the War on Terror. There's always a boogeyman out there to justify these programs, and they got to be. I mean, we can't have access to the terror watch list because the terrorist will win, so it has to be secret. Then you're stuck with the there's a contradiction there. Well, how do I know if I'm on it or not? Well, you don't know you're on it or not. And you can't know you're on it or not. Therefore, you have no action. You're not. There's no action for you to take. Well, that's a circular logic, because it's like the no-fly list, right? You you don't find out until you can't get on an airplane at some point. Then you can't find out why you're on it, and there's no recourse for these things. Just like the surveillance, the lawsuit a few years ago, that there was a group of people who sued the NSA over this the surveillance program. And they said that, you know, this was a violation of the Bill of Rights, of the Fourth Amendment, of the First Amendment, and these things. And they sued in court, and the Supreme Court ruled that the litigants had no standing because they can't prove they're targeted because the target's secret. I mean, okay.
Exactly. Well, again, it's this brotherhood is what they call themselves, mm-hmm. according to Kay Briggs, or the firm, which, you know, has their bases covered. So many of these judges would have been former, you know, 20-year military people who have the connections then with the rest of the brotherhood, and they would now be what's called JAGs, or judicial judge advocate generals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like this guy Stanley Sporkin, who threw out the case of Akwe versus the NSA in 1992. Akwe was an ex-NSA guy who understood what was going on. He sued the NSA, and he was a target, of course. And, you know, we're talking about signals, intelligence, and all this very, very sophisticated computer stuff. And in his lawsuit, he lays out what happened,
mm-hmm.
what is happening. And that's 1992 technology, which is more advanced than the average human being can even fathom.
Yeah.
And yet it's in this lawsuit, and Judge Stanley Sporkin, again, a judge, advocate general, a JAG, connected to the Brotherhood, threw it out. You know,
yeah,
he
was the, I think, the, he was a lawyer with the CIA who helped cover up Iran-Contra.
And, there you go.
And I believe he was rewarded with an appointment to the federal judiciary for that, for those efforts. He was the legal, what's the position of the CIA? Legal, not legal. I forget what the position actually, but, you know, basically he's there to supposedly to tell the CIA if they're doing something illegal or not, you know. He helped cover up the Iran-Contra thing and the drug connection, these things, a lot of other things, and he got a federal bench appointment, and that's how they control the judiciary. Is, you know, the good guys, the honest guys, don't get appointed.
You well, know. Again, yeah, the fast track then is reserved for the people who will go to the swinging parties, like Kay Griggs says, and you know, homosexually engage or bisexually engage with other members of the firm. In other words, they're having these very debauched parties, and this is where the pedophilia comes in. And this goes way back, you know, to the German disease, the pink triangle, you know, the Nazi military establishment, which a lot of came over, as you know, in Operation Paperclip. Kay Griggs says, "Hey, we're not talking a few thousand people here. Her uncle or her grandfather was directly involved in this, and he says over 200,000 Germans were brought into this country over a time span, and with them came this practice. Then, especially, you know, this kind of, you know, Cherry Marine thing, you know, where now you've got these and she also talks about these teams of flamers, you know, where you have one Marine teamed up with a Mossad guy or Israeli, and they are, you know, kind of a couple, and they do assassinations, and the Mossad guy will do the assassination in America to take care of the jurisdictional problems, and the American guy will do you know, the assassinations elsewhere or whatever.
Well, at least it's legal.
Well, that's right. They want to stay legal or more legal. I mean, if you can call murder legal, you know, but yeah, these jurisdictional issues, you know, but they've gotten around it. I mean, look at this way, Tim. I mean, we just have this scandal now with the Nunes memo. And, you know, according to Dr. Adrian Krieg, I listened to an interview that he did. This is the biggest scandal that's ever hit American history. And, you know, makes Watergate look like a bunch of Girl Scouts. And, you know, because now you have these intelligence agencies, you know, targeting President Trump,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and General Flynn and this volunteer, you know. So now General Flynn's homeless, can't pay for his defense costs and you know, the abuses of the FISA system, et cetera.
They hired Fusion GPS, this, like.
Isn't that a great name?
Yeah, you know. Fusion GPS. Yeah, and that goes to what you're saying about what this program is—the sort of the universality of this program.
Absolutely. And, you know, I go down these rabbit holes, you know, I start to realize I read things like, well, every good intelligence operation has five levels of deception, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, OK, so let's look at this. Is this a limited hangout? I mean, OK, now they're talking violations of the FISA. Well, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Well, just, you know, this particular scandal, which is actually an example, I think, of this kind of counterintelligence stalking on, you know, an incumbent president of all things and his, you know, his associates. This is nothing compared to what's going on globally and in America with the complete abandonment of all law by putting people on these terrorism watch lists, and then the FBI classifies them, you know, as non-investigative subjects. In other words, they have no protections. They don't know why they're on the list. They've lost their constitutional protections, and whatever corporation or university wants to test their microwave weapons or test their mind control cloning, their remote neural monitoring capabilities, which, by the way, they had in 1992, according to ACWAE versus the NSA, and they've only gotten much more sophisticated since. So, in other words, these individuals then have been written off by the nation and the legal portion of the nation, and can then be, you know, murdered with impunity.
Yeah, I mean, sounds crazy to the normal guy, but Zbigniew Brzezinski, remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Council on Foreign Relations, Club of Rome. He was hired by David Rockefeller to create the Trilateral Commission in 1973. He was the director for several years, foreign policy advisor to Hubert Humphrey, Jimmy Carter's national security advisor for 4 years. Well, this is what he wrote. You know, so this isn't a crack. Well, he may be a crackpot, not the crackpot in the sense that we mean it. He's an establishment guy, a lot of influence, you know. He writes, political strategists are tempted to exploit research on brain and human behavior. Geophysicist Gordon J.F. McDonald, specialist in problems of warfare, says accurately timed, artificially excited electronic strokes can lead to a pattern of oscillations that produce relatively high power levels over certain regions of the Earth. In this way, one could develop a system that would seriously impair the brain performance of very large populations in selected regions over an extended period. No matter how deeply disturbing the thought of using the environment to manipulate behavior for national advantages, to some, the technology permitting such use will very probably develop within the next few decades. I think it was written 20 years ago.
And he goes, it might be his 1970 book, Between Two Ages.
Yeah, so that's 1970.
America's role in the technotronic era. Yeah, and he's saying, you know, that these technologies are going to give the leaders the means of you know, controlling the weather, doing state-sponsored terrorism that way, and also controlling minds. And, of course, HARP, the High Active Frequency Auroral Research Program in Gakona, Alaska, one of these ionospheric heaters, has the potential then for manipulating the emotional states and moods and mind processes of large regions of the world.
Yeah. Mrs. Brzezinski, we remember him showing up on CNN.
Yes.
MSNBC, even Fox News, they're, you know, mainstream media guy, mainstream books. But, you know, then Americans don't read, right? But he in other courses, the technotronic era involves the gradual appearance of a more controlled society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite unrestrained by traditional values. Soon it will be possible to assert almost continuous surveillance over every citizen, maintain up-to-date complete files containing even the most personal information about the citizen. These files will be subject to instantaneous retrieval by the authorities. Well, now we have the internet, right? And we have cell phones everywhere, cell towers, and every purchase is monitored, or you could argue every thought is monitored, because they can just, by our internet searches, they can reconstruct what we're thinking, how we think, and what our views are, and then we can be put in a file somewhere, and should we become troublesome or something, we can be targeted.
Absolutely, and we are being targeted.
Yeah.
And I'll throw out another thing here, Tim, and I really appreciate your comments. That every one of them is right to the point. The 1940s, Ray Kurzweil, you know, just happens also to be a Jew, as many of these individuals are, like Brzezinski and Soros and, you know, Kissinger and blah, 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 blah. He writes a book called Cybernetics, you know, and this then becomes the focus then of a series of conferences called the Macy Conferences in the 40s and 50s that were led by Gregory Bateson and his wife, Margaret Mead. Gregory Bateson is, among other things, the guy who came up with the double bind. We might get to just define that in a second. But then this idea then gets picked up again in the 60s with Ray Kurzweil. He's talking about, you know, now the Macy Conference is also known as the Man-Machine Conferences. Okay, so what they're envisioning is a kind of a merging, a fusion then of computers and the human mind, and the cybernetics would be the control of the human organism through the central nervous system. So again, the idea is biological robots are going to be produced here, and this is the long-term goal. And Ray Kurzweil then is talking about the singularity, the point where computers get smarter than we are, and if we're lucky, they'll look at us as pets, and otherwise they'll look at us as food kind of thing. And this singularity event is supposed to happen, you know, they say 2040, or some would say it's happened now. But this is something that these guys really have been working hard to bring about, because what they want, and I think this is very key, although this is in the background, what they want, I believe, for this insider group is immortality. They want just what the serpent, you know, tempted Adam and Eve with in the garden. They want immortality. They want to live as gods forever. They want to be omniscient, be able to download all this information with, you know, chips and stuff into their brains, and then they want the bionics so they can live forever. Well, this, of course, so they don't go to hell, right? In God's world, they're going to hell, you know, because there's life and there's death, and then there's an afterlife. But these guys want to thwart that. They want their earthly paradise. And I think that this whole thing of cybernetics and this fusion of computers, so then now you're going to have two races. You're going to have the immortal race, which is going to live forever. And then you're going to have the slave race, the biological robots, that then is going to serve the elite. This, I think, perhaps worth thinking about maybe as the long-term goal for this particular group that, you know, like, you know, Soros would be a member of this group, Brzezinski, Kissinger, many, many others can be identified through time as part of this particular group, the World Revolutionary Movement, sometimes it's called, and it has deep legs that go back thousands of years in history.
So, yeah, yeah, it's it is a Luciferian project.
Yes,
which gets back to the whole you mentioned, like the a lot of these are Jews, like Kurzweil, Kissinger, and it gets back to the Kabbalah and that, you know, sort of esoteric philosophy. And I can't think of an example of a golem more than some sort of transhumanoid creation, you know, with some sort of a digitized intelligence put into it. Is
absolutely, you know. Look at that, is a perfect golem, isn't it? Because yeah, the whole concept of the golem, which again comes out of this kind of this Judaic Kabbalistic magic thing that goes back to ancient Babylon, and pretty much rules the world as I see it today, is these groups that are Kabbalistically oriented, like the Masons, etc. Whole idea of a golem is it's a man created living form. In other words, man's going to replace God. We don't need God anymore. The planet Earth then is going to be, you know, for Satan and his people, his servants. And we are going to do the creating now. We are the creators. And then, yeah, absolutely, these are golems, these biological robots. Then because these cyber organisms, these cyborgs, are the perfect golem. You just brought that up, and I hadn't made that connection. But yeah, of course.
And it's the worship of technology, because if technology is the key to divinity, it also is the you could say the development of the technology, the occulting of that technology is the justification for what they do, because they are indeed gods, and by virtue of the fact that they have secured the secret knowledge. And this goes into the whole philosophy, the organizational, I guess, idea behind the secret society and networking, and which infuses the intelligence agencies or occulted Judeo-Masonic banking system. And you mentioned a lot of the funding that enables these projects. Well, it's funny because, you know, Lockheed Martin or SAIC, the contractors that are developing these technologies, computer systems and these things, Amazon, people wouldn't associate Amazon, but Amazon is a part of it because Jeff Bezos is a huge contractor with the CIA, also controls buys out the Washington Post, so they can control the information and the culture. But the circular system of banking, which is Judeo-Masonic, but with our fake currency, the debt-based currency, how it's all funded through debt, which also further enslaves and leads to the further immiseration of humanity, while at the same time enriching these corporations and these very few people who utilize the technology to maintain their dominion. It's an evil system, but you stand back and you see how the system works. How is it that the federal government, which is more than $20 trillion in debt, can still lavish hundreds of billions of dollars on Lockheed Martin to develop this technology? Well, they do it through the banking system, and the banking system is imposed on the world through the military system. And I think Catherine Austin Fitch is correct in saying ultimately the question of the global economy, whether it will crash or keep on going, isn't so much an economic question or a political question. It's a military question. It's control.
I agree. And, you know, you know, people keep saying, okay, well, when are they going to pull the plug? You know, when is martial law going to be imposed and when is America going down? Well, you know, obviously this tribe has infiltrated and taken over America, as it did previously in Germany and England and various other key countries, Russia for sure, in their Russian Revolution. So I think the question is, you know, how long does the tribe need America? Mm-hmm. They've destroyed it from within with the, you know, Frankfurt School type of philosophy, the cultural Marxism thing. Mm-hmm. They've been busy at that, very, very busy, you know, with the Tavistock Institute and the Frankfurt School type ideas, ideologies. But really the question is, how long is America useful to this tribe? And as long as we are prosecuting these wars in the Middle East on their behalf, you know, for the State of Israel, basically, so they can become greater Israel and then take over the world, then I guess America still has a future, if you can call it that. You know, it's more or less an occupied nation now. It's doing the bidding of a fifth column group, which has taken over, as far as I can tell. The question is, is it still useful? And I think, it is the enforcement arm of the New World Order, if you want to put it that way. And the military is running that. That is America's role, according to these people and their vision. We can see now, we can see what their vision is. It's world conquest. And, you know, this goes way back, Douglas Reed's book, The Controversy of Zion, which is excellent, written in 1956, right after World War II, said, you know, communism and Zionism are again, two of their inventions, and they're flip sides of the same coin. Communism is to destroy all the nation states and turn people into slaves, and Zionism is to build up the State of Israel to become the world state. Mm-hmm. You know, so they are operating, you know, the same group is operating both movements. And again, I start to see this gang stalking thing as their kind of behind the scenes method for depopulation, and not only that, but for increasing the intelligence of their conscious supercomputers. For instance, the guy named Brian Tu, who has been a target now for 21 years, an ex-DOD guy, ex-FEMA guy, and who's studied he was a law student, but he studied the science of it with guys like Dr. Robert Duncan, who's written a couple of books about this, and he's an ex-CIA mind control guy. Brian Tu says what they're doing is they are trying to digitally clone the minds of many of the targets, and then that digital information what they're trying to do is clone the intellect, will, and emotions of that individual, which they call the soul. It's not the spirit, though, but they call the soul. And then that information goes back into their conscious supercomputer, which then gets smarter so it can go out and attack the next one, you know, with what they call hyper game theory of response. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Brian's got this whole scenario of how it works, and I've interviewed him or I haven't interviewed him. I've notated one of his 4-hour interviews, and so people can kind of come to grips with his assessment of what's going on, which I think is probably as good a description of what's going on with the remote neural manipulation and remote neural monitoring system as I've seen. Not all TIs would be perhaps under that system, but some would. And, you know, if they pick on somebody like, say, Bobby Fischer, you know, we'll and then they win. Let's say it takes a period of years and they get this guy's brain mapped. And then it goes right back into their conscious supercomputer. Now the average TI on the street, you know, he's playing these hyper game theory, response games with Bobby Fischer or the equivalent of Bobby Fischer and many others, very intelligent individuals. So we may, you know, very quickly succumb if we don't stop this program.
Yeah, and the big question is, what legitimate purpose do these programs have? You know, from the standpoint of from John Q. Public, why are we funding these things? Why are they allowed to exist? Well, they're allowed to exist because they hide behind the shield of national security. And national, yeah. I think I read it, national security is a cover for the interest of the oligarchs, the financial elite. And this is the problem with secrecy in general, this type of criminal. It's a ripe environment for criminal and psychopathic behavior, because there's no oversight, and people generally don't, you know, they don't need secrecy to do beneficial things.
Absolutely. And you're right. The national security thing has been a shield, which has actually covered more criminality than, you know, as according to Dr. Ronnie Kilda, than all the mafia activity in the world. I mean, mm-hmm. They get away with murder and much worse with this idea of national security by, you know, instilling fear in the group and saying, well, we're your protectors. I saw a great little YouTube video where it was at a Saturday market, I think, of, you know, one of these citizen, you know, vegetable markets or whatever in Santa Cruz. And so this guy who claimed to be FBI but wasn't, he had a badge, and he flashed it to this young man who's about 30, a new father. And he said, okay, you see that lady over there with the one with the, you know, the little baby in the stroller? She stole that baby. Would you help me, you know, and get that baby from her? And this 30-year-old, okay, now he's in a dilemma. You know, does he help the authority figure? Well, he does. In this YouTube, he goes over there and he steals this stroller from this lady, you know, and he brings it back to the guy posing as an FBI guy. And of course, then the young mother, she's totally distraught. Somebody stole my baby. She's screaming, and it just shows how easily people are manipulated by somebody with a badge.
You yeah, know, uniform and a badge, and they comply. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this young man is not a bad young man. You know, he's trying to do good, you know, and he's lied to by this guy posing as an FBI guy, and he winds up stealing this lady's baby. Well, this is very much like the whole gang stalking thing. You know, I mean, you lie to people and you say, okay, this person is a pedophile, this person. I mean, part of the program is, you know, defamation of the target. So you slander the target like crazy. And then the military is doing this, and likewise private contractors. And then you get the neighbors against them. You know, I say, well, you know, we go around and you say all the things, she's a prostitute, he's a pedophile, whatever. And then you get them to, you know, help you in the targeting. And so this is how the whole system grows. And it's a very, very evil system. You can see why. It's all based on lies. And it's based on it's about as diabolical as you can even imagine.
Yeah. And this is how if there was a public that was conscientious or aware of the importance of due process or the importance of, say, constitutional government, limited powers. And they may just be naturally skeptical about fusion centers as opposed to getting into the details of what the actual fusion centers are doing. But when you have a couple when you have a population that is so ignorant when it comes to basic civics, rule of law, the Constitution, and how the system should operate, and just kind of sort of just accept – you know, things like the Department of Homeland Security or something like the FBI. And they tolerate all this stuff. Whereas otherwise people would say, well, wait a second. You know, what jurisdiction does the federal government have in general police activity in my state? And if people were more protective or jealous of their constitutional rights and the jurisdictions, the important question of jurisdiction, of states' rights, and these things, these programs couldn't operate. And this is why there's been such a stress for the past more than a century of centralizing power. You know, this is what occurred, right after the so-called American Civil War, the destruction of states' rights and the concentration of power in Washington, D.C. through both world wars and the Cold War and the Great Depression. And these things, we no longer have a republic of independent states that have assigned some powers to the federal government for purposes of mutual defense and also for a common market. We now have an empire that has no practical restraint on its power, and indeed the people within that government see no practical limitations on their power. And this is the problem of a public which has been so dumbed down and so harassed that they can no longer really act as responsible citizens in a republic, because they have no idea of what their rights are and what the limitations of government should be.
Excellent point. Yeah, and one of the posts that I have on my gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com website is the laws of God and man that are violated by this program. And by the way, I refer to this not as gangstalking, but I like to use the word GOG's New Gestapo, which is an acronym for Global Organized Gangstalking Neuro Warfare Groups Electronic Surveillance, Slavery, Tracking, Torture, and PSYOPs Operations, which, of course, is, a lot, but is much more descriptive than gang stalking. And embedded in GOG's New Gestapo, you have, the whole concept of GOG is the Antichrist system of the Bible, and Gestapo, of course, we know is the military police of the Nazis. So embedded in that is the concept of Zionazis, which I think has taken control of what we're talking about. But yeah, in this article, number of laws of God and man that are broken by this system, GOG's New Gestapo, like all of the Bill of Rights, is thrown out the window, as well as other amendments, 13 and 14 and stuff. And if people knew, had a sense of what they're. So I think ultimately our best defense is going to be going back to the Constitution. But our elite has long since abandoned the Constitution, unfortunately. So it has to be we, the people, then, that brings them back into line with the Constitution. And that, you put your finger on it, that is the issue here. We have to restore the system of law that's developed under the Constitution in America.
And punish officials when they violate it. I don't think anyone's ever been – I mean, J. Edgar Hoover didn't go to jail for his crimes. In fact, there's still a building named after the SOB.
is the problem. Alan Dulles never
went to jail. Yeah.
And I consider him the greatest traitor in American history.
Richard Helms never served a day in jail for his established crimes.
Dr. Ewan Cameron never served a day in jail. In fact, he was president of all these, top-notch psychiatric organizations.
Well, how about just shame and banishment? I mean, I'm not saying you don't even have to put him in shackles. How about, shaming Henry Kissinger so he never shows his face again? That would go a long way. These people, these are the public figures that we know. Just shaming them, instead of holding them up as dignitaries.
But again, you've got to have an educated public to do this. I mean, Christopher Hitchens wrote a book called The Trial of Henry Kissinger. And then it got turned into a movie. And, here's a guy who was a Rockefeller man from the get-go, who's a homosexual German Jew, who single-handedly subverted the peace process in Vietnam and doubled the length of the ground war.
Mm-hmm.
There was a peace treaty on the table everybody was willing to sign. In 1969, he went ahead and went around, did secret deals and subverted it, and then it went on to 1975. So, and then of course the Chilean coup of 1973, which followed by the death squads in Chile and the military rule there.
All this is going on. Where's it? Also, him and Ford, he enabled that massacre in Indonesia in 1975.
That's right. Go down the line. I mean, if you look at, you look at these agentur of I call them the Illuminati, which is a very powerful Jewish secret society. You know, these agentur like Colonel Edward Mandel House and Bernard Baruch and Henry Kissinger. I mean, this is the function in the Illuminati of these people to become advisors to the top political leaders and then more or less handle them. They become the handlers to our presidents. And Henry Kissinger, you know, George Soros, mm-hmm. Brzezinski, Baruch, Mandel House. These are the people that have handled our top politicians. And they're all Jews and they're all in this cabal.
I can just imagine this poor Jimmy Carter in the White House thinking he's going to make a difference. And he's wearing his sweater, turning the temperature down on in the Oval Office because of the Rockefeller created energy crisis. And there's, of course, and then there's someone like a Brzezinski who's just, you know, totally, you know, rocking, just spinning him right and, I mean, doing circles around him, manipulating him right and left. And, you know, and pretty soon he realizes he has no power. You know, and he's out, and they orchestrate this whole Iranian crisis thing, you know, around him to get him out of the White House because of, I guess he attempted to rein in the CIA somewhat when he had, you know, when he fired, extend Bush's tenure as the director. That's when they started the Safari Club and these things and all these, you know. The problem is, I think, as I was talking to E. Michael Jones about this, he goes, the problem with Carter was he was feckless. He should have just taken all these spooks and had him shot. Put them against the wall and shot, because what happens is, you know, you can fire them, you can retire them, but they're not going to go away. They're going to go meet somewhere and start a safari club, and all their networks are still going to be there, and pretty soon, within a few years, they're going to undermine your presidency. It was exactly what happened, you know, because they're still going to meet with Kissinger, and they're still going to meet with Chase Manhattan Bank, and all these intrigues are still going to occur. It just won't be occurring on CIA proper anymore, but, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And of course, they were a little harder on John F. Kennedy.
Oh, well, know? Yes, yes. You can say. Well, I mean, even go back to Nixon. I mean, look at Nixon, the Watergate thing was like a CIA coup in the final analysis.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
I guess you could say it's an improvement. They're no longer blowing people's heads off, these presidents' heads off anymore.
Yeah, in a public forum, you know, just kind of a murder out in the broad daylight, you know.
But that was done in such a way because that. The assassination itself had an alchemical, you know, purpose.
Yes,
to it, you
know. Absolutely right. Yeah, 33rd parallel mm-hmm. at Dallas, et cetera. All this Masonic symbolism in downtown Dallas, and but yeah, I mean, the information has come out about this, you know, and yet we, the public, many people are afraid to go there. They would rather hold on to say something that's as preposterous as Arlen Specter's magic bullet theory.
Lee Harvey Oswald had to be the lone gunman because that way I'm comfortable.
Exactly. The
system works. Otherwise,
I'll believe what doesn't threaten me. In other words, this is just perfect classic 1984. Winston Smith has agreed 2 + 2 = 6. You know, just please don't torture me anymore. I'll believe whatever you say, you know, 2 + 2 =. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what we see with, Osama bin Laden did 9/11 and Lee Harvey Oswald. I mean, both of these guys are CIA assets, you know, and Lee Harvey Oswald is mind controlled to boot. And, you know, maybe also Osama bin Laden. It's hard to say. But I wanted to get back if and this is very enjoyable in the sense that I think we're pinging a lot of the important ideas back and forth. But I wanted to get back to this double bind thing of Gregory Bateson. You know, the double bind is a kind of a complex psychological. It's a no-win situation. It's a baited mousetrap. You're damned if you do, and if you're damned if you don't. And I listened to a little YouTube by a psychologist about how it works, and it's quite revealing. So when George W. Bush gets on TV and says, okay, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists, this is a perfect double bind because, you know, us, in fact, is the terrorists, right?
Yes.
But so, you know, you have to buy into a lie right at the beginning. Even to be safe, you have to give up your freedom of thought, your ability to think. You have to give away your rational mind in order to be with them. And of course, if you're considered with the terrorists, then you get on the terrorist watch list and then they torture you, that sort of thing, as they're doing to me. I mean, you know, I wrote a paper in 2002. Called The Reflections on the Origins of 9/11, 3 scenarios, 60 pages or so. single-spaced academic style, you know, lots of references, and got on the internet. Well, that could have got me on the list, you know, probably mm-hmm. did. But I did not give up. See, I didn't buy into the double bind, but if the double bind works as it's supposed to, you know, there is this threat of, you know, mom and dad or some all-powerful force is going to get you.
Well, I mean, an interesting point is you mentioned that writer, Naylor, Gloria Naylor.
Yeah.
How she was targeted because she just ran afoul of a neighbor who knew someone in the NSA, correct?
Yes, but what's so interesting about her story, which is fictional, but any TI would recognize it as the truth. Her neighbor happened to be a Jewish lady who lived on a little island down, you know, off the coast of North Carolina or Georgia, maybe Georgia. And but the lady's brother was high in the NSA. Mm-hmm. So she reported this to her brother. He put her on a list. And then pretty soon it's, you know, Operation Gloria Naylor. Or they'll always find a term which is derogatory. You know, they'll give her another name, Operation such and such. And then, the idea is to take her out. And at one point in the story, then she goes through all the technologies used against her and the methods. And then at one point, a Mossad guy comes in and runs the operation. So, see, this gives the military people and the intelligence people and all the private contractors, this gives them something to do. Now we have the national security enterprise, the mm-hmm. national security establishment. We got millions, billions, trillions of dollars going into targeting our fellow citizens who've been put on these stupid lists, who are innocent. So it is literally a picture of a society which is cannibalizing itself.
So you can get on this list because one thing, maybe you're you're an academic with some bona fides. So if you're criticizing the official narrative of 9/11 and raising awareness over this, that can bother a lot of people. Those are exactly the type of people they don't want criticizing 9/11 because they're sort of they have all their tickets punched. They're legitimate. They're academics. They're serious-minded people. So you don't want that. So you can get a list for that reason. Or you can just cut someone off in traffic accidentally one day and you're on the list because you've ran afoul of somebody. Or you may have a wife or girlfriend that someone covets.
You know? Absolutely. Or you might be a ex-spouse of someone who works for a defense contractor. Yeah. I know somebody in that situation. But going back to Gloria Naylor, in her story, 1996, which you can buy, it's a very good book. It's short. That's the year she noticed she was being targeted, and she died, I think, in 2015 or 2016, so that she was a 20-year torture victim. But what got her into the program, according to the book, is that this Jewish lady who lived across the street from her had a whole bunch of cats that kept peeing on her garden and killing the plants. Mm-hmm. So finally worked up the nerve to go over to see her neighbor, who was very kind of standoffish, and said, please, you know, don't let your cats come into my garden. They're peeing on my plants and killing them. Well, that made the lady mad. And then she talked to her brother, who was in the NSA. So it can be anything as insignificant as that. And Gloria Naylor was a, you know, recognized and popular black authoress, but she was not dealing with political subjects. She was dealing with, you know, kind of black social issues. Mm-hmm. Which I guess is a subject if you're FBI, because they, you know, they took out the black movement in the 60s.
They want Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton to be the black leaders. They don't want real capable leaders.
Yeah, you know, and my gosh, you know, Tim, I read this book by Gloria Naylor, and I think, man, what a magnificent woman she was. I would have just been totally proud to call her my friend, you know. But, you know, her response to this was very, very intelligent. And she produced this book, which I think all TIs and others should read to get a sense of what it's like to be in this program of psychological destruction.
Yes, yes. And what's very difficult about this, what's very vexing about an issue like this is once that meme gets out, it can also trigger a lot of other people. I mean, people can imagine these things. And it sounds like you're a paranoid schizophrenic, right? I mean, I think a lot of people will think that a targeted individual is insane, hearing voices. But then again, there's a technology to create these things, to create these effects in people. And they talk about this stuff like electronic warfare. I mean, I've seen these weapons demonstrated on regular news broadcasts where they're used to control potential riots or crowds. You know, it can render people very ill, where they lose control of their bodily functions, or a lot of heat. You know, it burns you to distract, to make a crowd disperse in these things. So the technology, at some degree, is revealed, but it's a question of how is it being developed or directed, and to what extent, you know, it's like I said, to what extent that that's the technology we know about. But, you know, there's DARPA and these things have these secret programs. So who knows what they're capable of doing? We get a glimpse of it, but again, they're not inhibited by ethics or morality. It's a question of what they can get away with and what they can do, not what they should do, you know.
Yeah, and your point is accurate that, you know, in fact, this program was designed with the attitude that, okay, we're going to produce a bunch of symptoms, which, if somebody complains of them, is going to be diagnosed delusional, schizophrenic, paranoid. And by the way, we have weaponized psychiatry and psychology yes. along the way and trained them so that, oh, if somebody says this, oh, I'm hearing voices, then they must be delusional. You must go to this mental hospital, blah, blah, blah. When, in fact, we've had the technology through synthetic technology, voice to skull, et cetera, microwave hearing, it's also called. We've had this technology going back to the 70s. You mm-hmm. know? And if we look at the MACI conferences, again, the 40s and 50s, the man-machine conferences, this character, Gregory Bateson, the goal that Bateson had was to try to mimic the symptoms of schizophrenia. Now, why would they do that? Well, this is why they're doing that. This is built into the program.
It was weaponizing psychiatry.
They've weaponized psychiatry. And this is not new. They did this in the Soviet Union. I've got an article there called The Psychiatric Reprisal. And this is all very political. Of course, if someone is targeted then and they complain of this or that, then the psychiatrists say they're crazy. Then they get thrown in a mental institution and they're out of your hair. And of course, this is also being done now in the United States. It goes way back to, you know, people like Ezra Pound thrown in St. Elizabeth's Hospital for, you know, telling some inconvenient truths. And so we'll label him crazy. Well, now we've got a whole system that is enabling this kind of thing. So if you're a TI and you're listening to this, you know, best not go to your psychiatrist or your police and complain of what's happening. But this is what I've learned. You know, you can keep a diary and you should, the system is designed. This is, again, the baited mousetrap. This is the double bind. The system is designed to put you away for complaining of what you're actually experiencing.
Yeah, and if you look at modern day psychiatry itself, it's almost like the implementation of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, and it is MKUltra itself, a sort of a commercialization of MKUltra, because since the 1970s, it's become increasingly focused on pharmaceutical drugs, which is, you know, the industry itself, and how the whole medical industry itself has been sort of taken over by Big Pharma, the whole standard of care, and, you know, I heard recently on college campuses that a full one quarter of the students are receiving psychiatric care and are on drugs.
Yeah,
a quarter.
Well, this is Aldous Huxley's vision for sure. Yeah. Coming true, you know, and of course he would be one of this elite group out of England. That you know, that predicted this stuff and worked very, very hard to bring it to pass, you know, through the Tavistock Institute and then the CIA is a spinoff of that, really. CIA is a spinoff of Tavistock and MI6, and the CIA in turn trained Mossad, and so it's all kind of a club, you know. They operate on the same principles, and they operate with each other jurisdictionally, you know. I can't do this, you do this, you know. And like you say, kind of trying to stay within certain legal parameters, although murder is not legal, but they do it. But yeah, your point is very well taken. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the DSM, now I think the fifth version, you know, keeps coming up with new mental illnesses. And very much is weaponized psychiatry and psychology. This is a political tool.
Oppositional defiance disorder.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, okay. What's the treatment? What's the standard care for that? Drugs.
Lobotomy.
You have a boy who doesn't like sitting in a classroom for 6 hours a day, and he's attention deficit disorder. So put him on drugs.
Oh, it's terrible. You know. Terrible. I mean, I was a, you know, energetic young first grader. Nowadays they would, even the last 20 years, they would have had me as, ADD, you know.
Yeah, I mean, what they would have diagnosed me when I was 7 years old, running around the class, my mom and going, I mean, it's just like, what do you think you're doing to a kid, stick him in a classroom like that? I mean, he's just like.
Torture. It's torture. And, yeah, you're creating good zombie slaves for the New World Order, I'm afraid what you're doing. It's called outcomes-based education now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's all United Nations, you know, which is, of course, right in there with this New World Order that we're talking about. You know, that's supposed to be the prototypical world government, and long has been designed for that. But, yeah, all this, education, outcomes-based education has more to do with propaganda and drugging than it has to do with imparting information. I did spend 30 years, teaching at, universities, so I saw the trend between 1981 and 2011. As we became more propaganda oriented and less informationally oriented, and as the quality of our students fell, mm-hmm. It became more and more difficult to do the old standard lecture method, you're imparting information straight for the whole hour or whatever. So then it becomes a matter of, we want you to come out of this class with a certain viewpoint. You know, we want you to be a multiculturalist. We want you to be a, environmentalist. We want you to be a feminist. We want you to be this, that, and the other. And I saw this huge at California State University, Stanislaus, where I spent the last 22 years of my teaching career. I survived it, but I was not ideologically assimilated. And so I would have received some pushback, as you can imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, well, I've had you an hour and a half. Any other ground you want to cover, or?
No, I really appreciate this, Tim. I think we really covered some important bases. We're learning more all the time, as I've said on some of the interviews. When you become a target in this system, nobody sends you a letter. You know, in fact, they will secretly spy on you for 2 or 3 years and get a profile on you, and then you'll go through the 6 phases of targeting that Dr. John Hall identifies in a couple of his books, and he's been a target. And that is, first. Selection, then surveillance, and then the actual gang stalking and defamation go together hand in hand, and then the electromagnetic attack, which can include remote neuromonitoring, and then the monitoring. So these more or less 6 phases, and this is another very compelling reason to believe this exists, because targets all around the world complain of very, very similar symptoms. In other words, the same kinds of things are happening to targets all around the world. In other words, this is a program mm-hmm. that these targets are experiencing. So the more we can put the word out and get the word out and network with each other, I think the quicker we'll be able to disable this system. I sure appreciate your efforts, to be willing to talk about these things, to have the courage.
Great. Well, listen, thank you for coming back on. I'll let you go. To follow your work, those websites, can you go through them again?
Well, yeah, my websites, particularly 911nwo.com, and then gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com, naturalclimatechange.org, San Luis Valley Waterwatch.com, and my musical website, which helps keep me sane and makes my brain happy. It makes it hard to read, I think, from the point of view of the electromagnetics, is ericcarlstrom.com. That's my music, and that's something I've always been doing. So maybe that makes my brain a little more inaccessible to the electromagnetic probing, which many people are being subjected to.
Yes. Well, yeah, I do recommend those websites. They provide a kind of a holistic approach to these things, sort of the military, the geopolitical, the economic, the cultural. These things, and that's you have to take a multidisciplinary approach to these things to get the bigger picture, understand, have a grasp of what's going on here. So I do recommend those websites. There's a lot of material on there. So, well, Doctor, thank you. I'll let you go.
Thank you, Tim.
I'll post this in a few days. When I do, I'll send you the link.
Great. Have a good one, and thanks so much.
Great. Thanks. Bye bye.
see the flow. I'd be sad and blue if not for you. If not for you, even that would see me wide awake. The day would surely have to break, but it would not be new if not for you. If not for you, my sky would fall, the rain would gather too. Without your love, I'd be nowhere at all. If not for you. If not for you, the window would hold no spring. Couldn't hear a robin sing. This wouldn't have a clue. If not for you. Sky would hold, rain would gather too. Without your love, I'd be nowhere at all. I'd be lost if not for you. If not for you, the window would hold no spring. You wouldn't hear a robin sing. Wouldn't have a clue if not for you. If not for you. If not for you.